6 beyond standard model. Just very generically, what we do is in quantum physics, we try to understand things, especially try to understand what is the world made of and what holds together. So we try to identify the basic building blocks of nature, and we try to understand what are the interactions among these basic building blocks. And we have a remarkable model, the so-called standard model of quantum physics, which gives a very accurate and adequate description of basically all the phenomena we observe in physics. And what we show here in this picture here is the partly confidence standard model. So we have a meta particle, the quarks, the leptons in this outer ring of this picture here. There are three generations or three flavors of uptype quarks.
So we have three generations of up-type quarks, the up quarks, the charm quark, and the top quarks. There are three generations or three flavors of down-type quarks, the down, the strange, and the bottom. There are three flavors of charged leptons, the tau, the muon, and the electron. And there are also three generations or three flavors of neutrinos. So these are the particles that we think all matter, all visible matter is made out of. And then and the second ring here, these are the gauge bosons. These are the particles that mediate the gauge interactions among the quarks and the leptons. There are the gluons that mediate the strong interactions among the quarks. There are the weak gauge bosons, the W and the Z bosons. And there's also the photon, which mediates the electromagnetic interactions. Now, what is important is that these gauge bosons, these gauge interactions, they do not distinguish between the different flavors of quarks and leptons. So the gauge interactions of the up-type quarks, the three up-type quarks, are identical. The gauge interactions of the up quark are the same gauge interactions as the charm quark has, and these are the same gauge interactions that the top quark has. Similarly, all gauge interactions of the three charged leptons are the same. Gauge interactions of the neutrinos are the same. Gauge interactions of the three flavors of down-type quarks are the same. The one particle that does distinguish between the different flavors of quarks and leptons, this is the Higgs boson. As you all know, the Higgs boson has been discovered now almost 3 years ago at the LHC, the Large Hadron Collider. And the Higgs boson is responsible for the masses of the quarks and leptons and also the weak gauge bosons. And the Higgs boson actually does distinguish between the different flavors of quarks and leptons because it gives different masses to the different flavors. So the Higgs boson will give a different mass to the top, the charm, and the up, and will give also different masses to the charged leptons. And the down-type quarks. Now here's again the standard model, this time written in terms of a Lagrangian. And if you use admittedly a rather condensed notation, you can fit the equation on a cup of coffee. And
can you spot an unnecessary thing?
Yeah, this Hermitian conjugate here is actually unnecessarily doubles the kinetic terms for the fermions here, but I don't know if they updated that or if you still get it in that form or if you get a corrected form also somewhere. I don't know that. Anyway, yeah, so what I want to do now on the next slide is go through the various terms in this equation and try to discuss further what are the characteristics of these various terms in this equation. So the first part is the gauge sector. So this describes the gauge interactions of the quarks and the leptons, so the fermion field here, these psi bar and psi fields, how they interact with the gauge bosons, the gauge field here, the F mu here. And this sector here is characterized by three gauge couplings. These are three free parameters of the standard model, and these three gauge couplings, they determine the strengths of the three gauge interactions, the strong interactions, the weak interactions, and the electromagnetic interaction. And this sector here, the gauge sector, is symmetric under a large flavor symmetry. So this sector is completely blind to flavor. All the fermions of a particular type are treated in the same way. And one can actually find that there's a large flavor symmetry of the standard model that is respected by this part of the standard model Lagrangian. Another sector of the standard model then is the Higgs sector. This would be the interactions of the Higgs boson with the gauge bosons, and also the Higgs potential. And this sector of the standard model leads to a breaking of the electric symmetry, and in the end is responsible for giving mass to the weak gauge boson, the W and the Z boson. this sector adds two more free parameters to the standard model. On the one hand, the Higgs mass and also the Higgs wave, so the vacuum excitation value of the Higgs field. But again, also this additional sector, well, it doesn't even contain any fermions, any flavorful particles. So trivially, it also is symmetric under the flavor symmetries of the gauge sector. And then finally, the last term of the standard model, the flavor sector. These are the interactions of the Higgs boson with the fermions.
Question?
Oh.
Yep. Question.
Oh, very good. So SU3 to the 5, this comes from the fact that you count one SU3 for the left-handed quark doublets, one SU3 for the right-handed up-type quarks, one SU3 for the right-handed down-type quarks, another SU3 for the left-handed lepton doublets, and one for the right-handed lepton singlets. So in total, 5 of SU3s. You could ask what happens if you add, for example, right-handed neutrinos, then this will change, and you might have additional symmetries that you could put in. All right. Now we have here the flavor sector, so the interactions of the Higgs boson with the quarks and the leptons. And with these interactions, once the Higgs obtains its wave, this will provide masses to the quarks and leptons. And it turns out that in order to describe the masses and mixing of the quark and leptons, one has up to 22 free parameters that originate from this sector. And this sector actually will break the flavor symmetry. This will break this large flavor symmetry of the gauge sector. And this is indicated here with these indices ij. So the different flavors of quarks and leptons, they will get different couplings to the Higgs. And there will be also flavor mixing between the various flavors of quarks and leptons through these interactions. Now, already from just counting the number of free parameters, it is clear that this flavor sector is somehow the most mysterious sector. It has a huge number of free parameters that are not predicted in the standard model, but that have to be matched to observation. And it gets even more mysterious if you look at the actual values that the values for the quark and lepton masses that come out from these interactions in the standard model. So what is shown here in this chart are the masses of the quarks and leptons as they are observed. And what one finds is that there's a huge range of masses that these values span, from the heaviest quark, the top quark, down to the lightest charged lepton, the electron. They're almost six orders of magnitude. And these masses, they show a very hierarchical flavor pattern. And within the up-type quarks, there's this huge hierarchy. So the top is much, much heavier than the charm, much, much heavier than the up quark. Same pattern, a similar pattern in the down-type quarks. The bottom is much, much heavier than the strange, much, much heavier than the down quark. And also among the charged leptons, the tau, much, much heavier than the muon, much, much heavier than the electron. It seems to get even more mysterious if we add neutrinos into the picture. The three neutrinos that we know of, they have masses which are even many orders of magnitude smaller than the masses of the other quarks and leptons. Now, concerning neutrinos, actually, they are, well-motivated ideas, or very, very well-established ideas of why neutrinos might be so much lighter than the rest. This so-called CESA mechanism, which could give an explanation why neutrinos are much, much lighter than the rest. In this talk here, I will mainly focus in the following on the masses and mixings of the quarks. If we look more in detail to the quarks, again, these are the three generations of up types and the three generations of down type quarks. What turns out is that the heavier quarks, they are not stable, but they can decay into lighter quarks. But these decays, they follow a very distinct pattern in the standard model. In particular, what happens is that there are no direct transitions within the up-type quarks, and there are no direct transitions within the down-type quarks. One says that there are no flavor-changing neutral currents in the standard model at tree level. This is a consequence of the so-called GYM mechanism, the Glashow-Villiopoulos-Mayani mechanism, which actually is a built-in mechanism in the standard model, which ensures that these direct transitions within one class of quarks is actually absent. The only way the quarks do decay directly is from the up-type quarks into the down-type quarks, or from the down-type quarks into the up-type quarks. And these transitions, they are mediated by weak interactions, by the charged W bosons, and the relative strengths of these various transitions, the various strengths, they are parameterized by a 3×3 matrix, a unitary 3×3 matrix, the so-called Kabibu-Kobayashi-Maskawa matrix. And for example, the entry BUS would tell you the relative strengths of the transition between a strange quark and an up quark, and VCB would tell you the relative strengths of the transition between a B quark and a charm quark, and so on. Now, the interesting point is that the CKM matrix, well, first of all, it's the only source of quark violation in the standard model, and one finds that it only depends on four free parameters. So even though it's a unitary 2×3 matrix, one can show that one can absorb many of these its parameters, and one is left only with four free parameters in the standard model. But because there are many more transitions between flavors of quarks than there are parameters, one can actually test if this CKM picture of quark violation in the standard model is realized in nature or not. So by measuring many flavor transitions, one can actually over-constrain these four parameters and test if the CKM picture is true or not. Such tests have been performed at the B factories, experiments called Barbar and Bell, which have been running until a few years ago. And what these experiments did is to collide electrons and positrons with just the right energy to produce a pair of B mesons, a B meson and anti-B meson. These are bound states of quarks, antiquarks, which contain a B quark. And these experiments were called B factories because they produced a lot of these B mesons. Together, they produced more than 1 billion of BB bar pairs. And they studied then very carefully the properties and the decays of these B mesons. And one outcome of this program is summarized in this plot here of the rho bar eta bar plane, where rho bar and eta bar are two of the four parameters of the CKM matrix. And what is shown here in these various colored bands is the constraints in this rho bar eta bar plane that results from various measurements of for example, B meson properties or B meson decays, or also properties of kaons, for example. And the remarkable thing is that indeed all these various constraints, they seem to overlap, they consistently overlap in this one point here. And within the theoretical and experimental uncertainties, which are at the level of 10% or so, given by the width of these bands, the level of these experimental uncertainties and theoretical uncertainties, everything seems to be consistent. And the CKM matrix indeed seems to give a consistent description of all the observed flavor changing phenomena. And this experimental verification of the CKM picture then also led to the Nobel Prize in 2008 for Kobayashi and Maskawa. Now, this one here,
yeah.
It says excluded at 95, more than 95 Wisconsin level. So it's essentially, so it's another measurement of the sine to beta, basically. So if you, this measurement gives you either this one or that one, and there are other measurements which actually exclude this possible solution. Now, if you actually look at the actual values of the CKM elements that have been measured, and find again a very hierarchical flavor structure. So one finds that the CKM elements, they follow a very hierarchical pattern. Say diagonal elements, they are very, very close to one. Then transitions between the first and the second generation, transition between strange and up and charm and down, they are suppressed by something like a factor of five or so. Transitions between the second and third generation are suppressed by another factor of five. And then the smallest elements are VUB and VTD, so the elements that parameterize the transition between first and third generation. There's again a very hierarchical pattern, and we don't know what the origin of this hierarchical pattern is. It's just an observational fact that there are these hierarchies, but from the standard model itself, it doesn't make any predictions of why there should be such hierarchies. From the standard model point of view, it could very well be that all of them are more or less, all of these elements might be all the same order. But indeed, instead, we do observe some very strong hierarchies in these matrix elements. The things are rather different in the lepton sector. So there, we again have a very similar situation in the standard model. Again, there are no direct transitions between the charged leptons, for example, but there are transitions between leptons, the charged leptons and the neutrinos. The corresponding mixing matrix is now called Pontecorvo-Maki-Nakagawa-Sakata matrix, the PM&S matrix, and again, the unitary 3x3 matrix. And also there, we can look at the values, the measured values of these mixing elements, and there we find a much, much less hierarchical pattern. So there, indeed, it seems that all elements are more or less of order one, though they are all within one order of magnitude. If one looks carefully at these measured values, some people like to see some structure in there, some sort of approximation. This element would be some tri-bimaximal structure here. But it's also a possibility that's maybe just completely anarchic. It could also be that these are just random order one numbers, which give together a unitary 3x3 matrix. So, but one thing that we do know is that the mixing pattern in the lepton sector is much, much less hierarchical than in the quark sector. So what I said, these various mysteries, these various puzzles that I mentioned.
This is another 4 parameters.
There are at least 4 parameters. Yes, so it depends to some extent if the neutrinos are Majorana or Dirac particles. If they are Dirac particles, then these are 4 parameters. If they are Majorana particles, then there are actually 2 additional CP writing faces with which are 3 parameters, so then you have 6 parameters in this matrix.
So this gives you 8 of the 22 parameters, and not the rest are?
The rest are the mass eigenvalues. So there I counted the neutrinos to be Majorana, so then you would have 4 for CKM, 6 for PM&S, so it makes 10, and then 12 masses for the quarks and leptons. To some extent, yes. I mean, it also depends to which extent neutrino masses are hierarchical. We don't really know that yet.
We know about the leptons.
Yes. It is not obvious to which extent all this fits together. There are various models and ideas that try to accommodate that, but I don't think that there is one explanation that would stand out as the one that would give a clear explanation why this is the case.
I think various is an understatement. I think
there are hundreds of papers explaining this. Yes. Right. So, all these things they usually are summarized under the name standard model flavor puzzle. So in principle, the standard model gives a reasonable description of all the flavor transitions that have been measured up to now, but it does not explain any of these mysteries. So we don't know even the zeroth order question, why are there 3 generations, why are there 3 flavors of quarks and leptons? They could be very well 2 or 4 or 5. We don't know what is the origin of the hierarchies in the Fermi spectrum. We don't know the origin of the hierarchies in the quark mixing. And we also don't know why lepton mixing is so much less hierarchical. Maybe it's even completely anarchic. So we are really lacking a theory of flavor which would explain all these mysteries. And there, of course, there are ideas how to approach this flavor puzzle, this flavor problem. And one idea is based on using symmetries. And the main idea here is that some of the masses of the, at least of the light quarks and leptons, they are forbidden by certain flavor symmetries, and then only arise after the breaking of the symmetries by a small parameter. What is shown here in this toy model here is a particular simple scenario where one introduces a U1 flavor symmetry, then charges the different quarks and leptons under this U1 symmetry. For this particular case, the top quark and also the Higgs boson would be uncharged. They have charge zero that would allow a direct coupling of the Higgs to the top quarks, and then you would expect that this coupling should be maybe of order one. That would explain why the top quark is the heaviest quark that we know of. In this particular example, again, the up quarks, they have very large charges, so you cannot directly write down a coupling of the Higgs to up quarks, but instead you would need to compensate this large charge by some additional field, by inserting an additional field which can compensate the large charge of the up quark. And then this interaction would be suppressed by the value of this additional field over some heavy mass scale to some power. In this particular example, it would be six powers of this expansion parameter. And indeed, if the VEF of this field divided by this heavy mass scale is some smallish expansion parameter, maybe 0.2 or 0.1 or so, you can arrange things such that indeed you will get an up quark mass that is much, much smaller than the top quark mass. And by assigning different charges to different quarks and leptons, you can try to accommodate the hierarchical spectrum that I showed on one of the previous slides. The type of models, they often lead to then characteristic the physics effects in many flavor observers, and this is something that I sort of worked on in the past. So if there is additional new physics at the electroweak scale or a bit above, it also might be subject to, or the masses of the additional particles and are often also subject to similar selection rules. So there will be an imprint of this model also on the masses of other new physics particles, and then this can lead to characteristic effects in various flavor transitions. It would in principle even allow to distinguish certain manifestations of this idea.
How many parameters do you need
So typically you need, there will be various parameters that you introduce. I mean, one parameter is this ratio of VEF over of some heavy mass scale. Usually if you try to do it with one of these expansion parameters, it doesn't work. You typically need at least two of them. And on top of that, then you have things like the masses, this mass scale that the VEFs of or the there will be, in order to generate these interactions, you will need various additional fields which are basically inside this blob, and then there are basically always order one parameters in front of this equation which can typically be adjusted to accommodate the measured values, but in most cases you won't get a precise prediction for the ratios of masses. You just get mainly a handle on an explanation why there should be a hierarchy in the masses. Yeah.
But you have more than the four parameters.
Sometimes yes, there are some models which try to predict certain things, but most of the case you end up having more parameters than you started with. But you have some explanation of why there are these hierarchies.
You would expect to have both on both lines operating both and extra both in the G. How can we not see that?
Yes, so the there are ideas that one can actually make these flavor models, one can gauge these flavor symmetries in principle. Yes, there are no interactions, but what you can do is, I mean, what only matters here in this game is this ratio of these two scales here. So in principle, you can make them in principle arbitrarily heavy, and you still would be able to explain hierarchies in the Yukawa couplings without, for example, having to worry about that these additional fields are in direct reach of colliders, for example. So in principle, it is possible to make these things very heavy and be safe from experimental constraints.
So even though the mass scale you're trying to explain are fixed, the parameters in the symmetry-directed model are not fixed enough to don't have anything like the gauge program.
Right. I mean, you have in these models you typically have enough. Or I mean, it depends on the model, but there are constructions where you have enough freedom to make these things heavy enough, and also to adjust the corresponding couplings of these particles in order to get the observed quark and lepton spectrum. Now, another class of ideas is, well, not using symmetries, but something else, for example, geometry. And here's the basic idea is that one introduces an extra dimension, and then one localizes fermions of the different flavors at different positions in this extra dimension. And then, because one can arrange things such that the wave function overlap between the Higgs field and then the different flavors of quarks and leptons can be different. One can have a situation where this wave function overlap is exponentially suppressed. In that case, we can also arrange scenarios where one gets very strong hierarchies between the quark and lepton masses, which are, would be given by some exponentials which come from small wave function overlap in the extra dimension. Yet another idea is to use loops. So what that means is that here one starts from the assumption that, at least again, at least the light fermion masses, they don't have the light fermion masses that they actually arise from quantum effects. So the light fermions, they would not couple directly to the Higgs field, but instead they would couple to the Higgs only at the quantum level by the exchange of some loops of heavy virtual particles. And in that case, the ratios of the quark and lepton masses, they would be given by some powers of some loop factors. So in case if these masses are generated at the one loop level, it would be a 1 over 16 pi squared. If some masses are generated at the two loop level, it would be 1 over 16 pi squared squared. And indeed, these are ratios which are roughly close to the ratios that are observed experimentally. And this last idea, this is one idea that I find particularly fascinating, which I worked on recently. And I was very surprised to see that this basic idea works remarkably well. It actually gives a spectrum. It gives a spectrum which agrees also at the quantitative level amazingly well. So what we showed is that they can actually have a very, very simple setup that implements this idea, which lead to a pretty realistic spectrum of quarks and leptons. And the model is the following. We take the MSSM particle content. This is the minimal supersymmetric extension of the standard model. So every standard model particle gets its super partner. And you start out from the main assumption that your Yukawa couplings, the coupling of the standard model fermions to the Higgs boson, are rank one matrices. That means only the third generation would get masses from the Higgs. Then the first and second generation masses, they are generated by these loops of the superpartners. In that case, the charm quark would get its mass from loops of charm quarks, superpartners of the up-type quarks, and the gluino, the superpartner of the standard model gluon. And what is shown here in this picture here, in this chart here, in these gray boxes, are the generic expectations you would get from this type of models without any tuning of the mass parameters of these additional heavy states. So just by allowing to vary the masses of the heavy additional particles by order one numbers, one would get these gray boxes, and they agree remarkably well with the observed spectrum. Just only the muon mass, these seem to be a bit too heavy to be explained by this mechanism. But we figured out some possibility to actually also bring this gray box closer to the observed value. This is something which at first sight seems to work remarkably well, and this is something that I will continue to work in the future, trying to understand what are possible new physics models that by this mechanism give a realistic spectrum for quarks and leptons.
So we're circulating loops are the superpartner?
Exactly, yes. Yes, so what happens here is you want to give a mass to the charm quark in this example here. You know that the charm quark doesn't directly couple to the Higgs. It can, in this loop, you can have charm quarks, superpartners of charm quarks. But also those wouldn't couple directly to the Higgs because of supersymmetry. Also those would not be able to couple to the Higgs. But you can mix the charm quarks into top quarks, the superpartners of the top, which does directly couple to the Higgs. And then through this loop mechanism and this flavor mixing in the supersymmetric sector, you would get a mass of the charm quark in that way. You could use other extensions, so it's not really required that these particles in this loop are supersymmetric particles. In principle, you can add just by hand partner particles to all the standard model particles without enforcing supersymmetry, and you would still would be able to generate such a mechanism. So the fact that this is we did that in the supersymmetric extension was just by because it MSSM, the supersymmetric extension, are motivated also by other reasons. But in principle, you can do that with just generic partner particles of the standard model particles. Yeah?
But with the MSSM, you get lots of new parameters. All the mixing angles and the mass of the supersymmetric.
Yes, yes.
They're all more free parameters. So you're not reducing the
parameters. Again, here we are not reducing the number of free parameters. Indeed, for example, this mixing between the charm and top scores, those would be another free parameter. But what we assume here is that these are generic order one mixings. So no special hierarchical structure there, just order one mixing here. And then in that case, you get these gray boxes. If you would assume some hierarchical structure here, also here, you could start to engineer where exactly these boxes will end up. You could make them go all over the place. But if you just allow for completely generic mixing, order one mixing angles here, you would get this hierarchical structure for the standard model crocs and leptons.
So then maybe I'll ask you a question a bit more. How is the moral prediction? Do you have quantitative predictions here?
No, actually not. So this is this is just an explanation of why there are hierarchies. But we cannot really pin down any of these values more precisely in that context. Exactly. The muon is off. The reason is, I mean, it's a one loop factor below the tau, and the observed ratio between tau and muon mass is only, I think, 17 or 18 or something like that. And starting from a 1 over 16 pi squared, it's one ends up down here. So one has to work somehow to push this up further. And one idea is to introduce new gauge interactions, basically new interactions, new particles, which could run in this loop, which have larger couplings, which would allow then to move this gray box further up to the observed muon mass. That adds a new sector that would add a new force. Well, I don't want to really predict these numbers. I try to just get a reason why there are these hierarchies. I'm not really trying to predict the muon mass. I'm not trying to predict the electron mass. I just try to find an origin of these large ratios of masses that are observed.
Yeah, because you're judging these about how they solve these models about how they solve one problem of quantitative prediction. We all agree they do not solve that problem. They do not reduce the number of parameters. Well, they're trying to solve a different problem. And so, you can argue about which is to explain the qualitative. Reasonably well, but there's one problem, right? But so you can argue about the merits of that program. You can argue about whether the models solve that problem. But let's not judge them based on whether they solve a problem different from the one they were trying to solve.
Okay.
How heavy does sparks have to be?
Ah, yes, good point. They have to be pretty heavy actually, because we assume that these mixing angles are all order one. That means in order to not run into trouble with flavor writing constraints, for example, kaon mixing, the squarks and the gluinos have to be something like 1,000 TeV, actually. Yes, also the A terms would be of the same scale. So everything is assumed to be at the same scale then in the end. So we don't want to put any structure on top of it. We say everything would be at 1,000 TeV with order one variations of the various parameters. Also large tangent beta, yes, large tangent beta you need. All right. Now, we saw that to address the standard model flavor puzzle, there were various concepts, various things like extra dimensions or new flavor symmetries or supersymmetric particles in loops that we try to introduce in order to address the problem. But of course, there are many additional problems that the standard model doesn't address. And I'm sure you've seen list of object type. You have dark matter, dark energy, symmetry, antimatter, symmetry of the universe, just the possibility of quantification. And of course, there's the famous hierarchy problem, which motivates the fact that there should be physics beyond the standard one, that there should be new physics. Let me just try to explain the hierarchy problem in two slides. So the hierarchy problem is connected to the question of what gives mass to the Higgs boson itself. So the Higgs boson gives mass to all the other standard model particles, but what gives mass to the Higgs boson? And well, in principle, the Higgs mass parameter is not forbidden by any symmetry of the standard model, so you can simply add a Higgs mass to the standard model by hand. But on the other hand, it also means that the Higgs mass is not protected from any quantum corrections. So the Higgs mass that we get out in the end should be the sum of the bare mass, the tree level mass that we put by hand, plus some quantum correction. And the problem is that when we estimate how big this quantum correction should be, we find that it should be of the order of the largest scales that we are aware of, namely the Planck scale. The quantum correction of the Higgs mass should be of the order of the Planck mass. So this correction is actually something like 36 or 34 orders of magnitude larger than the value of the Higgs mass, the value of the electric weak scale as we observe it. So we need a very weird, very strange fine-tuned cancellation between the bare mass and the quantum correction in order to make this work. In principle, there's nothing inconsistent with that. It could happen that there are two very huge numbers that combined give a very small number. Things like that tend to happen. So I spent time both in the States and in Canada, and I was very surprised to see that the surface areas of Canada and the United States are very similar, actually. So there's a tuning at the percent level here between these two huge numbers. So nobody would claim that there has to be new physics in order to explain such a cancellation. However, if we compare that to the fine-tuning of the Higgs mass, this would correspond to the surface areas of Canada and the United States to differ roughly by the size of an atom. So in order to avoid this ridiculous amount of fine-tuning, we actually do believe that there should be new physics. There should be some new physics that protects the Higgs mass from huge quantum corrections to avoid this fine-tuning of 32 or 34 orders of magnitude. And whatever this new physics is, it should be at or below, even below the TV scale in order to cut off these quantum corrections to the Higgs mass in order to have a cancellation that doesn't exceed, let's say, a percent or sub-percent level at least. Okay, and well.
Is it the land mass or is this also the...
Right. I'm not sure, to be honest. These are the numbers you get when you put it in Google. So I don't know what they count. So one of the main goals of particle physics is, of course, now to find these new physics, to find the new physics which protects the Higgs mass, and there are various approaches to that. One approach is to look directly for the new physics by producing it, the new particles at high energy collisions. And this is, of course, a very successful program. And it has been very successful in the past. For example, the weak H boson, the W and the T bosons were found in that way at CERN. The Tevatron Fermilab found the top quark in the 90s in that way. And of course, a few years ago, the Higgs boson was discovered in that way at the LHC at CERN. And of course, we all hope that by going to higher energies with the next one of the LHC, we will discover some other new particles directly at the LHC. So there's a complementary way to search for new physics, that is to search for the indirect effects of virtual new physics particles on properties of standard model particles, so to look for the virtual effects of new particles in low energy experiments. Also, this approach has been very successful in the past, for example, by measuring the branching ratios, the decay modes of kaons. It was possible to predict the existence of the charm quark several years before it was actually discovered directly at SLAC and BNL. And even more, it actually was even possible to predict the value of the charm quark mass studying properties of kaons. Similarly, by studying the pre-writing properties of kaons, it was possible to predict the existence of the third generation of quarks, so it was possible to predict the existence of the top and the bottom quark many years before they were actually directly observed at Fermilab. And it was also possible to predict the large top quark mass by measuring certain properties of b-mesons. Now, currently there's a very broad and diverse experimental program going on that looks at various low energy observables that are sensitive to new particles, to new heavy particles. There are experiments that search for flavoring processes involving b-mesons, d-mesons, also rare kaon decays, experiments that look for lepton flavoring decays, lepton flavor universality tests, electric dipole moments, anomalous magnetic moments of the muon or the electron, for example. There's a very broad and diverse experimental program that are all, and all these experiments are in principle sensitive to various forms of new physics, to new particles in an indirect way. Now, how does it work? How can one be sensitive to the virtual effect of heavy particles by looking at low energy experiments that do not directly produce them? Well, the classic example is to look at beta decay, so decay of a neutron into a proton, electron, and an electron antineutrino. And of course, you can describe such a process by Fermi theory. You can write down a four-Fermion contact interaction between a neutron, a proton, electron, and electron antineutrino. And you can actually measure the corresponding interaction strength of this process. This would be given by the Fermi constant. And the Fermi constant is a dimensionful quantity. It is units of 1 over energy squared. And so you can actually simply invert the Fermi constant, take the square root, in order to obtain an energy scale, which is a scale of around 250 GeV. And in the context of the standard model, of course, we understand that this Fermi interaction, this four Fermion interaction, originates from the exchange of a virtual W boson, a weak gauge boson, which transforms a down quark into an up quark electron and electron antineutrino. And we actually can, in the context of the standard model, compute the value of the Fermi constant, could be given by the ratio of the couplings of the W boson and the W boson mass squared. And indeed, many decades before we actually directly knew about the existence of the W boson, we were pretty sure that at these scales, somewhere around these scales, there should be some new physics particle which is responsible for such an interaction. And indeed, the known value, the measured value for the W mass, 80 GeV, is very close to this rough indication, this rough estimate we could get from just by observing nuclear beta decay. And the main idea is now that basically to find processes, to measure processes, which are, let's say, the modern analogs of nuclear beta decay. And one class of observables one looks at are flavor changing recurrents. As I mentioned at the beginning, that these flavor changing recurrents, they are actually absent in the standard model at tree level, so there are no direct transitions, for example, from a B quark to a strange quark. However, say these processes, say they do happen, and the reason is that one can actually always take a detour in the case from the B quark to the top quark, and from the top quark to the strange quark. So in the standard model, that means that such processes will be very strongly suppressed. There will be loop suppressed, and they will be suppressed by small ZKM elements. So such a process from a B quark decaying into a strange quark would proceed via a loop of a heavy top quark and a heavy W boson. And this particular example here, one also has a photon attached here, which produces a plus or minus pair. So we won't have an effective interaction in the end of a B quark going into a strange quark and a plus or minus pair. And one can estimate what would be the interaction strength of such a four-Fermion interaction. And what one finds looks like that. It would be a loop suppression, a 1 over 16 pi squared, and then also a suppression by small CKM matrix elements. This is really a process that happens very rarely. But by measuring the process and by comparing the rates of such a process to the standard model prediction, one can actually gain information on the possible existence of new physics particles that could also mediate such a direction. So if new physics couples in a flavor-violating way to B and strange bottom and strange quarks, it could contribute to such a process, would be given by some new physics coupling over some new physics scale squared. And then by comparing the measurement to the standard model prediction, one can gain information on this ratio of new physics coupling over new physics scale. And the scales that one can actually probe in such a way are very large. If one assumes that the new physics flavor coupling is of order one, there's a huge range of low energy flavor validating and CP validating processes that one can look at that are sensitive in principle to very large physics scales. So there are various, these are only a few examples. There are several rare B meson decays, K on decays, K on mixing, D meson mixing, various lepton flavor validating processes, and also electric dipole moments of the electron, the neutron, or other hadronic systems. And they all are in principle possible to probe new physics at scales that go up to tens, hundreds, thousands, or even tens, thousands, or hundreds, thousands of TeV. These are scales that are far higher than the scales that are directly probed at colliders. So the Higgs mass here is somewhere here. The scales that are produced, that are probed at the LHC at the moment are around one TeV. So those are somewhere here. But in principle, with these indirect probes, with these indirect low energy probes, one can probe new physics at much, much higher scales, assuming that the new physics flavor coupling is of order one. Now, given the fact that in all of these experiments, we don't have any clear signal, any unambiguous signal for any deviation of standard model predictions, we run into another problem, the so-called new physics flavor puzzle. As I just said, as I just showed, the low energy flavor observers, many of them are very sensitive to new physics far beyond the TV scale. Yeah?
You just want to write back something that seems to be very important. So the bottom line is that all of these measurements have been made and there's no evidence from new physics up to 1,000 TeV.
Yes, in some cases, for example, K-on mixing.
No, just stop. Shouldn't we be shocked by that?
Oh, should we be shocked? Yes, yes, to some extent, yes.
That there's something wrong with the hierarchy problem, not just the TeV for the weak scale, but the scale in the larger than TeV.
Maybe yes. I will come to that in a few slides. And I mean, there are certain things you have to do to your models in order to not be excluded by all these various measurements.
Given that there's something like 10 measurements there.
Oh, that actually,
if there is a physics as small multiple of TeV, you would expect to see something in some of the
channels. Generically, yes. That if there's in physics then at the TeV scale, it means that it has to have also a very non-trivial flavor structure. It might have a flavor structure that mimics the one of the standard model. And in that case, also the new physics flavor coupling would be very, very small. And then it would be possible to have new physics at the TeV scale without violating all these various constraints that we have.
Right,
Yes.
I agree with this thing. There is one measurement here that is at odds with the standard model prediction, and that's neutron EM, which should depend on the magnitude of what it is, because TeV could be over the one, right?
Yes. So, yes.
So at least relative to naive expectation, there is one indication maybe of new physics in terms of the accidents. So it's
yes.
not as
yes.
you know, depressing as you
may yes, yes. yes. Yes, very good. Thanks for this comment. Yes. Okay, but so going back to the puzzle, as also mentioned, yes, we want new physics at the TeV scale, but we don't see any, apart from the neutron EDM, we don't see any convincing evidence for deviations from standard model expectations. So if certain physics at the or below the TeV scale, why have we not seen it yet in these flavor observers? So I'm just basically repeating now the discussion that we just had. And so what we need to have is that the ratio of new physics flavor coupling over new physics scale squared has to be much, much smaller than the Fermi constant. And if you just roughly characterize new physics model in this plane of model building effort and fine tuning of the electroweak scale, then new physics models, they should sit somewhere in this upper part here of this chart here. The experiments they would exclude this lower part here. And the two directions one can principally go is one way to fulfill this equation would be to make the new physics scale very heavy. So we would decouple all the new physics effects, but then you have to live with a large fine tuning of the electroweak scale. On the other hand, if you insist that there should be new physics at the electroweak scale, then you have to ensure that the new physics flavor coupling is very small. You have to maybe align it to the standard model flavor structure. You have to use flavor symmetries that ensure that these NIPIs coupling are small, you can invoke principles like something called minimal flavor violation, which say that, that these NIPIs flavor coupling should be suppressed by the same CKM elements as in the standard model. And there are various other ideas that would try to address the question of how can we make these flavor couplings of NIPIs actually small. Now, in terms of collider searches, in terms of collider physics, the role of collider physics in this framework here would be that on one hand, of course, we want to push to higher and higher scales to make sure or to possibly find new physics at higher and higher scales. On the other hand, of course, it's also very important to continue to search for new physics at lower scales, at the TV scale, at the electric scale, to make sure that there are no light particles that have been missed so far in the searches. And the role of flavor physics in this picture, well, as I just described before, flavor physics has a very unique reach to very high energy scales. And by improving the measurements of various flavor observables, one of course, increases this reach to even higher scales. On the other hand, if there's new physics at the electroweak scale, if you maybe even find some new physics at the electroweak scale or the TV scale, flavor physics will give very important complementary information on the possible flavor and CP rating couplings of the new particles. And in the remaining few minutes of the talk, I just want to give a few examples on one hand of this very unique reach to high energy scales, but also on the complementarity of searching for new physics with low and high energy experiments. The example for the reach to high scales, now in the context of a concrete example, what is shown in this plot here is a reach, the possible reach to quarks and leptons. So these are the superpartners of the quarks and leptons in supersymmetric models. This would be the reach of various low energy probes to masses of quarks and leptons that are in the 10 to 1,000 TeV range. So K-on mixing again gives the strongest, in principle, the strongest sensitivity to quarks at the level of 1,000 TeV. This is the situation now. If you look into the future, in a decade or so from now, many of these processes will be measured, will be constrained with much higher precision. And then there's a full host of experiments, for example, electron EDM, neutron EDMs, char mixing, various lepton flavorating decays, which are sensitive to quark and leptons in the range of 100 to 1,000 TeV. If these quarks and leptons have anarchic flavor structures, so if they have order one flavor violating couplings. The other example of the complementarity, well, we didn't find any new physics particles at the LHC yet, but we did find the Higgs boson. And of course, one can ask now the question, what can flavor observables, what can flavor experiments say about the couplings, the properties of the Higgs boson? In the standard model, as I said at the beginning, the Yukawa couplings of the Higgs boson are the only sources of flavor and CP violation. And once you go into mass eigenstate basis, you find that the Higgs couplings are flavor diagonal and CP conserving, so they would be proportional to the masses of the various quarks and leptons. If there's no physics, however, you can, for example, describe it again with some sort of contact interaction, in this case, interaction between two fermions and three Higgs bosons. And then this physics would show up or could show up both as off-diagonal couplings, flavor off-diagonal couplings, but it will also modify the flavor diagonal couplings in principle. And these modifications would be given by the ratio of the electroweak scale over some new physics scale squared. And from flavor observables, we actually know quite a bit about the possible size of these off-diagonal elements. So what is shown in this table here, I don't know if you can read it, but in many cases, off-diagonal couplings of the Higgs to quarks and leptons, flavor off-diagonal couplings, are constrained to be extremely small. Again, K-on oscillations, K-on mixing, give the by far strongest constraints, and some combinations of these off-diagonal Yukawa couplings, they are constrained at the level of 10 to minus 12 or 10 to minus 13 even. So we actually know that if there's new physics which modifies the Higgs coupling, the off-diagonal elements, the flavor off-diagonal elements, they do have to be very, very small. They do have to be very strongly suppressed. Now, concerning the diagonal couplings of the Higgs boson, what is shown here is measurements from the LHC. And what one sees here is that indeed the coupling to the top quark, the bottom quark, the tau lepton, also some information we have already on the coupling to muons, they seem to follow at least within the uncertainties, within the experimental uncertainties, they seem to follow the standard model prediction, which is this dashed line here. It would be very nice in the future to extend this plot to smaller and smaller masses and couplings. In particular, it would be very nice to extend it to include couplings of the first and second generation of quarks, and also to maybe even to electrons. This is, of course, very difficult because the couplings, the masses of these particles are very small. That means the coupling to the Higgs in the standard model are very, very small. And one has to develop various ideas, various concepts in order to, which might allow us to be able actually to measure the couplings of lighter quarks and leptons in order to answer the question if indeed the coupling of the quarks to the Higgs boson are proportional to the masses, if the coupling of the leptons to the Higgs are proportional to the lepton masses. All right, then a few more examples of complementarity. So in addition to the Higgs boson that we found, there might be additional Higgs bosons. There might be, for example, charged Higgs bosons. And one can search for these charged Higgs bosons, for example, in top decays. The top could decay into a bottom quark in the charged Higgs boson. And these are searches that are performed, for example, at the LHC. And in this plot here, which shows the charged Higgs boson mass against tangent beta. Tangent beta is a parameter which parameterizes the strength of the coupling of the charged Higgs boson. One can exclude certain regions because we didn't find any charged Higgs boson yet. That means this orange region and this yellow region are, for example, excluded by these direct searches for a charged Higgs boson at the LHC. And there are also other ways to search for charged Higgs bosons. This would be by looking for their indirect effects on b-meson decays. One could look at the decay of a b-meson into a tau and a neutrino, and then the charged Higgs boson would show up here as a virtual particle in this decay. And then here one would exclude this red region up here. So this one gets complementary constraints in this plane of the charged Higgs boson mass versus this coupling parameter. Very similar, one can do the same thing with additional neutral Higgs bosons. Again, one can look at the direct production of these Higgs bosons at the LHC, and one can look at their virtual effects in the case of neutral B mesons. And again, one finds that the various approaches they can cover different regions of parameter space. And now maybe in the last minute, I just want to show yet another example of possible complementary or possible information on new physics scales that one can obtain from B physics, from B meson decays. This is one example, one rare B meson decay that I've been working on over various years now. This is a decay of a B meson decaying into an excited kaon, which decays further into a kaon and a pion. And out of some decay, also there are also two muons which come out. So this is exactly at the quark level, this B to S mu plus mu minus transition that I had on previous slides. And this is a flavor change in the current processes. Process is loop suppressed and CKM suppressed in a standard model. That means that such a decay is very, very rare. Only one out of something like 2.5 million B meson decays in that way. And but it also means that because it's very rare, it's in principle very highly sensitive to possible new physics effects. And what we did is in the past we proposed various observables that are theoretically clean and that are highly sensitive to possible new physics effects. And the LHCb experiment at the LHC is now, or did collect already, thousands of these B2 K star mu plus V minus decays, and is starting to systematically measure the observables that we proposed. What one can do now is to try to understand what is the parameter space of new physics parameter space that can be excluded or that can be probed by these measurements. And what is shown here is basically the flavor, one of these flavor rating couplings of new physics. And here's another one of these flavor-rating couplings. So in this plane of these two flavor-rating couplings, one can try to understand what is the favored new physics parameter space. And after the first measurement that has been performed, after the first results that have been shown, it was possible to constrain the parameter space in this red blob here. And then with more and more data, this blob starts to shrink. And then something like 2 years ago, something interesting happened, something exciting happened. Now the preferred region actually doesn't overlap anymore with the standard model prediction, which would be here at 0, 0. And if we add more and more data, it turned out that indeed this discrepancy persisted. And there's a discrepancy at the level of like 3.5 sigma. the measurements seem not to agree very well with the standard model prediction. And this can actually then be interpreted as a hint for new physics. It can be interpreted as a hint for the presence of some form of new physics which has certain flavor-biting couplings. The next step is then to understand what would be the scale associated with new physics, and one can then translate or by assuming certain values for the flavor-biting coupling, either 1 or CKM suppressed, loop suppressed, and can then determine a new physics scale that would correspond to the observed discrepancy. And this scale is somewhere in the range of few hundred TeV to 35 TeV. And we can also think to what would be possible in physics models that generate such interactions. And one thing that we came up with is that this might actually be an effect of an additional gauge symmetry, an additional force that acts on muons and tau leptons, which could be responsible for such an interaction that is observed by the LHCb experiment. So that was now an example of how an discrepancy that is observed in B physics would actually lead to a prediction for a possible new physics scale where new phenomena should arise. And that leads me to my summary. So in this talk, I tried to argue that flavor is one of the most puzzling of the standard model. We have the standard model flavor puzzle. We have the new physics flavor puzzle. And we actually might even already start to have some hints for new physics in flavor observables. And what we do know is that flavor and collider physics are actually very complementary in our search for new phenomena at CTTV scale and beyond. So if we do find new physics at colliders, we need to measure flavor observables to understand the flavor and CP properties of the new physics. On the other hand, if you find some new physics in low energy flavor experiments, this would then define new physics scales that then can be directly explored with future colliders. And my role in the coming years, on one hand, I will try to build a theory of flavor, try to address the standard model flavor puzzle. On the other hand, I will try to analyze the characteristic signatures of flavor for new physics at low and high energy experiments. And finally, also, I will work on trying to understand the flavor and CP properties of the Higgs boson. All right, thank you very much.
I have a question about, you know, why we see my understanding from what you said is that the high energy side of new physics seems very unlikely. It's only the light side that is more open. Is that right? I mean, from
what I say. What do you exactly mean that the high energy side?
When you say you have two types of signatures in physics.
Yes, so.
Right. It seems to me from what you say that higher scale, you have to go above,
If you assume that there is a large amount of flavor violation in the new physics sector, then it has to be at extremely high scales. You can also argue that there is new physics at the low scales. That simply means that we have to have some mechanism which ensures that the couplings are small. And there are various ideas, various concepts which do that.
To the previous slide, the discussion was that all these before. You have the measurements.
This one. Yep.
But they all don't see anything except one. So the one that sees something in which side?
You expect it to see something.
Within standard model,
right?
So both sides are equally favored. What's the conclusion of your discussion? If you have to bet today,
If I have to bet.
Is there any equation, or we have to look more? If you go back to the.
I definitely. Would hope that it's this option here, and there are I think that there are very good reasons to say that this fine tuning problem is actually something that we should take serious. And so I would be willing very much to put model building effort ensure that there are new physics at the TeV scale which do have flavor properties that maybe mimic the standard model, but that ensure that, that we actually don't have this extreme fine-tuning of the electroweak scale. So I would say that the pressure, there's more pressure to go in this direction than into that direction. Maybe, yes, yeah. Well, for the electron, I mean, we had some crazy ideas how to do that. I mean, in principle, you could imagine to have a plus E minus collider that you run on the Higgs resonance and try to directly produce Higgs bosons in the plus E minus collisions. In order to do that, you would really need to run for a long time, and it would probably require resources that nobody would be willing maybe to do. But there are some ideas how to at least bound the coupling to electrons to be smaller than some amount. There are already bounds. I mean, for example, the coupling to electrons, we know that it cannot be much larger than the coupling to muons. There are already bounds of that type. But to really reach the value of the standard model, which would be somewhere down here, this requires probably new ideas. And I don't know if we will ever really have a precise measurement of the electron Yukawa coupling.
Thank you.